Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media. A good story is a good story. Hosted by Marsha Casper Cook. Live shows every week with interesting interviews in the entertainment field with writers, producers, directors, and screenwriters. There's also shows about newsworthy topics and group discussions about writing tips to help writers reach success. New to the show are conversations about personal struggles and how to feel good about yourself in today's world. One thing's for sure, it's always a lively conversation and lots of fun. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, everybody. Special guest today, Amy Patricia Mead. She's been on several times before, and it's always so interesting. And I was just thinking, you know, and said, sit back and relax, because I was just telling Amy that when I look at her covers, it just reminds me of like home and sweetness, and even if they're murdered, it doesn't matter because it just looks good. The colors are beautiful. And her career is, you know, she's done a lot of different things. So I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about herself, and then we'll go into a conversation. I probably should mention, because I always seem to forget mentioning my things. Okay, MichiganAvenueMedia.com has its own special website now, and all the shows are on Spotify and Apple and Podbean and everywhere you get your podcasts. So if you're looking for us or any of the guests or anything shows from the past, then you can just find it all there. And then I think I'm going to, well, I do have a blog going, just starting, that some of the guests interviews, and I'll add more photos. You know, things are changing as we speak. So, you know, I'm changing. I keep changing different things. So I just, you know, sometimes I forget that I think people are seeing what I'm doing, but that is a discussion we're going to have in a little bit, because those of us that are out there realize that maybe some of the people that we knew from before aren't seeing anything we've done. So we're going to talk about some things that maybe we can do that are new that might get us more visibility. So, hi, Amy. I'm so happy you came on. You remind me like a fall, you know, and just that's really the truth. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself, because you do a lot of things.
Oh, I do. Well, it's great to be here again, Marsha. Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh,
it's like chatting with an old friend here. Yeah,
that's right. I wish we were in a part where we could see each other in a place.
Yes.
Coffee.
Yes, exactly.
Sipping coffee.
So I am a published, traditionally published mystery writer. I've written cozy mysteries and historical mysteries. I think I'm up to book, 18. Might have lost count.
Wow.
Could be 19.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest is due out in February. It's available for pre-order. And that is Death Upon a Star, which features Evelyn Galloway, a Hollywood script supervisor working on the set of Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca, who encounters a murder of a silent film star, and she uses her powers of observation and continuity to help solve the crime. She works with the police, not one of those, you know, Budinskys who irritates the police. So, which happens so often. And that comes out February 4th.
That's exciting. You know, it just keeps going faster. You know, it does. I can't believe the end of the year is almost here. So February seems so far away. I know. It just seems like it does go fast. We're busy. We're doing different things. And, you know, we're socializing all the time. And we're on Facebook. And you're writing. And you're doing, you know, your website and all the things. And you manage to get out, though, and go out publicly places. I've seen you were somewhere just a little bit ago in October.
Oh, yes, yes. There were a few appearances. Autumn always seems to be very busy. I think everyone's book buying, planning for the holidays, books make wonderful gifts. I think there's also that sort of nesting vibe, so to speak, going on. The nights are drawing in.
Right.
the cold weather's coming, so let's prep ourselves with a good read.
Right. I'm telling you, that's what you remind me of.
Thank you.
That you're sitting with your popcorn and your cheese, and it's Saturday night, and you're looking for an old movie, and there you go, right?
That is me.
Which is Rebecca was an old movie, you know, and they did remake it, but
they did.
It's such a name of a. I mean, that's the thing. The name Rebecca. Okay, you don't forget a name like that because when you're thinking of movies or things, I think lately when you have a title like that, like a Rebecca, let's just say, the movie, it's interesting how that always sticks with you. Or like Bullet or any of the older movies, one word. It just sticks with people.
Yeah,
which is, and, you know, we're all looking for that great title. And so here's Rebecca. Let's say this movie comes out and it's Rebecca. And so many years later, all these people now, younger ones, everybody's watching these old movies. So it is kind of interesting, like even like you think of like Network or any of those, when you really think about that, that one name makes you remember things because I know when I'm listening or watching TV or listening to an audio, some of the movie titles don't fit.
Yeah.
And then I forget what they are.
Book titles too. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Creating a title is an art. I really believe so. I have difficulty. I write my books and send them off to the editor, but there's been a couple that I've actually come up with a good name that stuck. But for the most part, my editors and I go back and forth, and my agent, the three of us kind of brainstorm to come up with a title because it's not as easy as you would think.
No.
And especially if you're very close to the work you're creating it, it's hard to be very objective and choose a name that people would love. Death Upon a Star is actually one of them. I wrote the book and I just said, I have absolutely no clue to entitle this. I mean, there's Alfred Hitchcock appears in it. You have a bit of the backstage drama on set. You know, but then you have a mystery, which of course is fictional. So it was very difficult. Unfortunately, my publisher, Severn House Books, in the UK, did some marketing and testing, and Death Upon a Star actually came out the winner. So, and I think they chose well, but we'll see if the public agrees.
I think so, you know, because I think that, you know, some of the testing that people do, a lot of people don't want to do that because then they go, you know, it might not be the right title that they like. But, like, even if I've tried to change any screenplay that I wrote and I want to put it out, if I change the name, the publisher I use, she's always laughing. She says, if you change your name, I still call it the same name. So it doesn't matter. Whatever I picked at the beginning, it's in my head. Just like it doesn't leave.
Yeah.
You know, even though I tried, because I knew that I made a mistake with my Grand Central, but it was okay as a screenplay, but then as a book, it didn't, but then I tried a lot of things and different covers, but I just can't, this is what that book is to me, you know, but when I do it as a screenplay, I have changed it somewhat over the years, but then in my head, that's the title. You know, I mean, a lot of these things have been optioned, but it doesn't matter because titles really, they're not any, you know, it's not a copyright. You can just use any title. But you're right, coming up with the right title is, but, you know, but so it's like a simple name like Rebecca, which you wouldn't think would matter that much, but this is one particular movie that most writers for sure know this.
Well, it's based on the Daphne du Maurier novel.
Yeah.
And it was actually in its day was quite, it was immediately following all that big buzz about Gone with the Wind and Gone with the Wind had just wrapped and then Selznick purchased the rights to Rebecca and it was another big media frenzy as to, it was a hugely popular book as Gone with the Wind was. So there was a built-in audience and everyone, you know, basically holding their breath and waiting to see who would be cast as, well, she has no name in the book. She's the second Mrs. De Winter, but we never know her name. She's referred to as I in the script when you see pages of the script. And and then there was a big search for who they tried. Selznick tried to do what he did with Gone with the Wind. Tried to build hype, who will be the star, and didn't generate quite as much buzz. But it was quite the thing back then.
It's a long-standing one. Because, like, if you think of Gone with the Wind, you go, oh, my, it's like 400 hours. You got to sit there. Rebecca's not, right?
Almost as long as the
war
was.
In those years, you could, like a lot of times the movies are only 90 minutes.
Yeah.
When I started screenwriting, it was like 80 to 120 minutes. But now majority of the movies are 90. And if they come up more than 90, it's usually the end, the credits, and the song that a lot of people don't listen to. And even on Netflix and the shows, it drives me crazy because they take – just when the movie's over, I like to see the credits. But then they go – they stop it, and then they go, do you like this movie? And then if you – I do hit that button. I do because I think it's an easy review. And I think I wish they would do that with – they do it with books on audiobooks, but it's just so simple. But then after that, you can't see anything else. It drives me crazy. They immediately turn the movie into, you know, the next movie.
I'm always hitting the back button. I'm married to a musician, so he always wants to hear the exit music. So I'm always hitting the back button trying to – yeah.
Because sometimes years ago when you were in the theater and then the movie, the end, the song was nominated for like an award. You don't even know the song because you left the show already. Like a lot of them, I'm saying. A lot of movies, you'll walk out and that song you don't hear often. And if you leave before the song comes on, you don't even know what the song was.
Right.
Because it goes on. You could be in the show for 10 minutes because that's how long it takes to add all of the, you know, the different, you know, anybody in it, you know, costume designer, makeup, whatever. But most people just leave. That's what I miss about going to the movie. I don't do that much more as I used to. I used to like to watch everybody going out to see how their reactions were.
Yeah.
To me, I like that audience. But it's very different since COVID. A lot of people just watch at home.
They do. It's the allure of being in your pajamas and comfy and being able to pause. And it's a toss up. I love people watching as well. So it's interesting.
Yeah, me too. I know. So you came up. So how did you pitch this?
I had published my Tish Tarragon series with Severn House.
Uh-huh.
So there's 8 books in that series, and I had just completed the last one, which was Cold Turkey, which takes place at Thanksgiving. A little murder at the holidays, always fun, always a bit of fun. And my editor asked me if I would be willing to pitch them another series idea because unfortunately in the mystery world, even though readers enjoy series through the years, having more than 8 or 9 books in a series, the readership tends to fall off as it goes along.
Yeah,
I've been fortunate that I've been 8 books into that series and there is still interest. But there's some writers out there who write 3 books in a series and that's it. And it's a shame because there's always the authors I speak to always say that there's more story to tell, but they're going to have to find another platform in which to do it. So my editor asked me if
true.
I would.
I feel that when you're saying that because I have a series, it's all about love, 3 books, and I go, I'm done. And then I ended up now putting them all together in a collection because I felt the third one didn't get what the others did, and I felt like that was my favorite part. The end of that story, I really liked, and I felt, oh my God, I love that. So that's the one they're not. So I put it together. We'll see how that goes. But you know, and it's together. But I have more, so I'm writing one now, another one. So never say never, because I change my mind constantly. You know, I don't know. You know, when I was doing screenplays, everything was a standalone, and you just do it and you're done.
Right.
But when books, you know, and I said, oh, I'm not going to do a series, but then I went, oh, well, maybe I'll do a fourth, because I still have the characters, like you just said, that ran in my head of what
yeah,
I need to do.
They speak to you. I mean, they tell
so
you their
what
story
if you
isn't
have,
over
you
yet.
Have, well, you have eight. So you had eight. So
yeah.
You don't put them out of your head if they come back in your head?
At any given moment, I have another series, the Vermont Country Living series. So at any given moment, I'm working on either a book for Severn House or for the Vermont Country Living series. So I'm kind of accustomed to putting those stories out of my head. There's a transition phase, of course, when you end one book and then you're contracted to do another, to write another book to a different publisher. So you do have to find the voice of the other character, remind yourself who's who, feel, you know, put yourself, you're getting to the headspace, for lack of a better term, to really feel what those characters are experiencing. Remember, okay, here's where I left off. And I have to admit, and I don't think I'm the only one, sometimes I have to go back to the previous one and just get reacquainted with who's who, the minor characters, the minor recurring characters. Was his name Harry? Was it Henry? Am I? It's those little Maggie things. Yeah.
And how old are they, and what happened to them? And you know, but I had somebody on the show years ago. What they did was, after they finished the book, they made a smaller book of just something that happened between the next book and the other book. So they didn't
like
lose track of what happened. Yeah, and they didn't lose track of what really happened, because you do lose track sometimes of what's happening.
I'm pretty good with understanding. It's the names, I have to be honest, of the smaller characters. It's like, that's the one that really gets me. And my editor always teases, because a lot of times when I'm writing, and I proof everything, but there's always that one character that she'll go and say, wasn't he Arthur on page 31? And you look back and, so he was. Yeah, sorry, Sarah. I think you get the characters out of your head when you're writing, but I think if you really love your characters, they're still in your heart. So when you pick up again, you can continue their story.
But don't you see, sometimes I see the same name for a character, and it's just what I see when I think of that character. Like, somebody was asking me a question, like, because I haven't used Grace a lot, Gracie or Grace. So then somebody had said to me, you know, she was going to read my book, and she says, my sister's name is Grace. And I go, oh, I said, what does she look like? So I said, does she have blonde hair? She goes, well, she does. I go, well, I thought so. Because when I picture blonde hair, I go, oh, this is Grace. I can't help it. And if they look a certain way. But that's, to me, what I think that person is already. And sometimes I use names, and it does drive me crazy, though, because I've used the same names in other books, but I can't help it. That person is that name. And it doesn't come to me in any other name. It, you know, that's who they are, even if it's in another book, but it's another character, but that's their name. So I can see where you can have that issue with writing.
Yeah.
So maybe sometimes I write a list of the characters so I don't forget them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I know lots of writers who do that. Yeah.
I know.
To keep their notebooks. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's a good way to say it. It's true, because, you know, I think people think, like, cause when you hear people say that, like, if they're doing a movie, you know, they're talking on TV or something, they go, I don't remember this. You go, well, what do you mean you don't remember it? But it's true. When they're playing different characters, they're different people.
Yeah.
So
they've
taken that character and put it away.
It's true.
You know?
And I think when you've written a lot as well, someone will say, oh, I love this certain scene from this certain book, and you wrote it 7 years ago, and you're like, oh yes, I forgot I did that.
Right.
That was quite clever, wasn't it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Our brains just work a certain way, I think. That's what happens.
That's it. That's totally it. And I think what readers don't understand, too, is by the time you finish a book and you my editor sends it back to me about, I would say, there's three rounds of copy edits, and then there's the proofs, the galleys that we go through. So by the time you finish, and usually those come back while you're writing the next book.
Yes.
So your head is in the headspace of the next book. Your brain's there. But then you get pushed back to the other one to review the edits and make changes and this and that. But the fact of the matter is, as much as you might have loved that book when you were writing it and you're very proud of it when it's published, by the time you're sick of that thing.
I know that. You're tired of them. Goodbye. All right, so Lily, so I interrupted you. I'm sorry. So go ahead how you got this.
Well, I've always, I was asked by my editor to pitch them another series, and I've always, as you know, we've had discussions about movies on our prior podcasts. Always loved old movies. Always had a love of Alfred Hitchcock movies, since I'm a mystery writer, the master of suspense. And I got to thinking, I work part-time for some filmmakers in California, and they were shooting a film, and I realized how much responsibility a script supervisor actually has, not just continuity, just noticing in this scene when we cut yesterday, he has a cigarette in his left hand, now it's in the right. This action here by this actress doesn't make much sense because we said on page such and such of the script that, you know, her father's dead and now she mentions him again, so there's a discrepancy. there's a lot that the script supervisor does, even the timings and how quickly the lines are uttered by the actors, how long the scene should be, making sure there's a good rhythm in the dialogue. And when I started learning more about it, I did some research, and I also realized that women are still primarily script supervisors, and they've traditionally always been. It started in the old movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're female.
The first script, they were script girls then, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Were women who just said, hey, I think that's wrong. I think you need to go back and reshoot that. And I got to thinking, what a neat detective this could be. Someone who has that trained eye to be looking for discrepancies. Someone who's looking for continuity and for everything to make sense and to fit together and for cohesion. So I came up with this idea that my heroine, Evelyn Galloway, lives around the corner from a fading film star, a silent movie star who is now taking bit roles. And she gets off the bus one night from being on set of Rebecca. And she sees someone running from this film star's apartment, and this person bumps into her. The next morning she sees in the paper that it's this film star. And from the discrepancies in the newspaper account and what she's seen, she starts to think that there's more to this story than meets the eye. And she begins to work to piece things together using her powers of observation. So I pitched it to my editor, and she absolutely loved it. She loved that it takes place in 1939 because I can work in a little bit of Hollywood glamour. A bit of the making of Rebecca, all those little fascinating historical tidbits. And Rebecca also started filming just as war had broken out in England. And of course, with a mostly English cast, that affected the cast greatly and the filming, the order of the filming, because Hitchcock wasn't sure if his actors would be drafted called up to serve,
right.
called up
yeah.
for service in other ways. So it it all came together, and my editor just loved it, and thankfully, and told me to go ahead, write it, and we'll take a look at it, and there we are. So it comes out in February.
So will it be audiobook also?
No, no. I don't have an audiobook deal for these yet, no. But it will be hardcover, paperback, and ebook.
Ebook.
Yeah.
See, I think, you know, now people are saying that, you know, there are more people reading paperback again. I think, you know, I think what's happening is people were on the phone so much, and a lot of people are just trying not to be on the phone. So if you're reading a book on the phone, which God knows when I first heard people were doing that, I went, oh, I'm not going to do that. But I do. Thinking, okay, you know. But, and because how could you read a book when you're on your phone? Isn't it too small? You're not getting the, you know, how do you, you know, is this going to be how you really like to read it? And it doesn't matter. But it is interesting, though, that people have been trying to now buy paperback.
I think it's, as you said, I think it's the screen time during COVID. Where everyone was glued to their computer screens or Zoom meetings, this and that. Everything was virtual. And I think there's also, in today's world where everyone sends texts and receives emails and this and that, having an actual physical book, you can turn your phone off.
Or being
off.
Away from it.
Put it aside. You're not interrupted. It's much needed me time, you know, I think.
Well, I think that's right. I think that's true. People need that.
Yeah, they need it.
I watch a lot of movies because I watch movies. It really relaxes me. And a lot of people don't watch movies, but I love them. And when you were saying old Hollywood, like the newer stars, like, there's one that comes to mind, which is Blake Lively. I think she's like old Hollywood. I love watching her because she's just not like everybody else.
Yeah.
She has something very different about her.
Yeah, she's, Kate Blanchett, I think, is rather lovely,
Yes, her too. Yes,
she's very talented,
And, you know, and a lot of those actresses, you know, because some of the, you know, people don't really recognize some of the people that they did before. But I do think now because of TV and series, you're seeing a lot of people that may not have been on the screen or only in movies are now on the small screen, you know. And that's what they used to say, oh, I don't want to be on this, you know, that's not happening. I don't want to be on a series or I don't want to be on TV. But they all are now. But they didn't want to be.
Yeah, I think because for a time, and especially with COVID, I think television, there was more money being thrown into television series than there were actually films, large screen
and that's
production.
Why they're not as good as they were because they just put a lot of stuff out. But I find sometimes people that I don't know who they are, it's still a great movie.
Oh,
I find a lot of those where I've never seen them, but, you know, you try to give it. I would point now, I really would like a movie instead of having the commitment of 8 or 9, because then I want to finish up and it becomes like a job to finish this up, you know.
Your assignment is to watch these 20 seasons.
It is finished. Well, that's what I did I watched Outlander during COVID. And Handmaid's Tale, you know, and that's what I did. Those, because they were long commitments, you know.
Yes.
And some of the things that were good that I've seen in the past, they're not coming back, you know. I think it's hard. You don't know if they'll be back or not.
Yeah, you wait on tenterhooks hoping that they come back.
Which is why series books can do okay now, because of that. Because people are used to it. They want more.
They
want to know about the people.
They want to know what happens. How things turn out.
Absolutely. I want to know. In my own characters, I go, what happened to you? What are you doing?
Okay. yeah. Same here. Same here.
Yeah. I'm curious anyway, as a curious type. All right. So you really enjoy doing this. So what do you think, is there something you want to do that you haven't done?
Oh, well, there's always, it's funny. There is
right.
a standalone book on Edgar Allan Poe. Actually, the Poe toaster, if you know who that is, it was someone who visited Edgar Allan Poe's grave for about, I would say, 40 years and would leave on Edgar Allan, the anniversary of Edgar Allan, yes, a rose and a bottle of brandy. And it's happened
that,
and no one knew.
In my head rings a bell hearing that.
Yeah. A lot of people would wait and see. It was a shadowy figure that would come into the graveyard and leave. I think it was three roses, one for Poe, one for his wife, and one for his aunt, who were all buried in that same plot. And then a partially drunk bottle of brandy. And so I researched, did a lot of research, pitched it to my agent, and the book would basically be a modern couple investigating who this toaster was, the identity of the Poe toaster, and why this person was visiting the grave, but also entwining it with Poe's last days. But I didn't get a sale for that, so I don't know. I still might pitch it because I... still something that fascinates me, and I think it could be a great book. Possibly to this
publisher.
So it's
good to have ideas like that, and you act on them. So that's a good, you know, because sometimes a lot of people don't act on them, you know. So that,
it's
you know,
true.
That's a good thing for people out there listening, you know, that sometimes you think, if you think it's a good idea, maybe it really is a good idea. And if you can't get a publisher to do it, just write it yourself. Yeah, because I think that is what happens. And I think, you know, I was mentioning it to somebody, you know, the same writers over and over and over keep getting deals. And other people just feel neglected. But that's the good thing about independent publishing, that they can do these things. And there are tons of books that are great. And most people that are looking through Amazon, they don't really care who the publisher is. We care. We know. You know, if it's an independent or an established publisher. But most people, they couldn't care less.
It's
so
true.
Don't not write a book because you think you're not going to get a big publisher, but you could have a career. Well, actually, with the Blake Lively, her movie, I'm just thinking of the name of it now, but Colleen Hoover, she started as an independent, I think.
Yes, she did. Uh-huh. Yes.
And so... And look at that.
Yeah, you never
know. I mean, nobody knows.
It's true, and I think a lot of it is timing, too. When I pitched the Poe toaster, maybe that wasn't, you know, what publishers
in that moment,
wanted. Maybe
exactly,
and who knows? Now, today, maybe someone, an audience would really love that idea, you know.
There's a varied audience. There's a big audience for everything.
I do too.
I don't think and I think the only problem is that Amazon, when they put you in a group that you don't belong in, because they have figured an algorithm that's wrong, that can ruin it for an author, and it does. Because I have looked at mine sometimes. I go, what are you doing? There was some romance I don't know which one, and they have it in nonfiction. I'm going like, what? This wasn't here before. So I think people have to really, authors should look at their books to see if there's any changes, because they make them by mistake sometimes.
Yeah,
and you don't realize it if you don't go back and look. You know,
because
when I go back and look at things, then I go, oh, why did I do this? Because I see all these things wrong. And I have to go back and do everything, and then I have to send to the publisher, I go, why is this there, and why does it say this? And... you know, and it's just what happens. I don't know, but it's not right, but it does happen. So I think if people write a book, you have to keep, it doesn't matter if you have, with whoever you're published, because not everybody goes back and looks at what happens. Because they have some very insane categories these days that books don't even belong in. And so people won't find their books. which is and even with mysteries now, thrillers, they don't have, it's not categorized right. You know, it's too broad.
Or it's, and I think, too limiting,
why,
too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there are a lot of issues like that. You know, and the marketing of Amazon, I mean, you know, I take my books off the Amazon, you know, to the KDP, you know, the Kindle Unlimited and whatever. I take myself off. I put myself on. Then I go in, you know, I'm changing different ones. It is difficult for people now to, and if you're independent, it's very hard to get yourself placed right.
And
in the descriptions, you know, like they can be longer now. They weren't at the beginning, but now people are saying, well, maybe you should do it longer. And then some say, oh, you should do it shorter.
Yeah.
Because people can't tell with one sentence. It's the reader cannot tell what the story is about, or even if they want to read it in one sentence.
No, they reviews help a lot too. If you can have someone to write a blurb about your book, a well-known name is always helpful as well. Say, oh, well, I know
it's
that
hard.
Author,
it's
and they liked it. Yeah.
It's very difficult to get reviews, and I think that's an issue for a lot of people, and I just wish it were different, because when you see some of the TED, like 10,000 reviews, 8,000 reviews, that's, you know, you can't compete with that, because I just don't know where they get all these reviews.
It's interesting.
You know,
yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah,
and that's why a lot of authors, they end up stop writing, because they go, oh, I can't be like this. You know, don't you just have to have your own groove, and you have to, like, actually, which is what I wrote on the title of the show, is having fun when you write. You enjoy writing.
Oh, I do.
And that's why your books are good. Yes. So what's your advice for people out there? Because there's so much noise for a writer now. They're hearing voices, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that, don't put he said, she said, do this, do that. I mean, it's so confusing. We had a whole conversation on one of my shows about he said, she said. Because nobody knows what to do with that. What's your opinion on that?
My opinion is that there should be no opinions and there should be no rules.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I think,
right.
I forget who said it, but the first rule of writing a novel is that no one knows how to write a novel.
Right. Very good. That's good.
I mean, of course,
you're
there's
right.
rules of grammar, but there should
right.
be no real, but I mean, there should be, you know,
because
you shouldn't say to your...
people don't talk grammatically correct. People don't talk grammatically
correct. They
don't. Correct.
No. In dialogue, they're not all... My dialogue is not always grammatically correct. I end with prepositions.
Well, mine is
because
never.
Guess
no, it's
what?
Not. Yeah.
The people, when they speak to each other, don't rearrange their sentences
right.
so that they're grammatically
right.
correct, especially if you're in a hurry or if it's an emotional argument.
Right. And sometimes you don't finish a sentence. Somebody will say something
yeah.
and you'll just, the person walks away and they don't care. They're just done. Don't finish.
Right. Or if someone's in an argument, they're going... back and forth, and no one's actually completing anything, or they're talking over each other, or, it's...
Right.
But I really think, A, as you said, you need to write what you want to write. I think the best thing to do is, if you would read it and it makes you happy, if it's something you would love to read, that's the key component. Don't write to trends, don't write. If your heart isn't in it's not going to be good. The second thing when it comes to genres and subgenres and everything else, I mean, when I introduced myself, I said I write cozies. Now, cozy mysteries are mysteries where basically the violence happens off camera. If it were a movie, you'd walk in and there's a dead body there, but you don't actually see blood, you don't see gore.
Right.
But there are other rules of cozy mysteries, like there's readers out there who go, well, it needs to be an amateur sleuth. There can't be any sex. There can't be any this or that.
I know.
And I don't pay attention to those. So my publisher's from the UK, and I'm sorry, but this seems to be more of an American thing than outside the U.S. The UK, I mean, Midsummer Murders, if you've ever seen the show, is a popular UK murder mystery show that's been on for 23 years. And it's been on during prime time. And it's a police procedural. There's police investigating the crime, but the way the murders are committed are so outrageous. But this is on during prime time. So, there's some really weird stuff going on this show.
What's the name of it? What's it called?
Midsummer Murders.
Oh, the Midsummer. No, wait, I've not seen that. I should. I know some people have liked it.
Yeah, Midsomer. It's Midsummer County, a fictional county.
Okay.
So,
is that on PBS or...?
That is, you can probably get it. I think they show them on BritBox or Acorn if you have a subscription. You can stream them.
I have a subscription to like everything, and it's ridiculous. But I don't have BritBox. I have everything, and I don't even need all of these anymore because I don't. You know, I can't even keep up with what. Yeah, I go like, oh, I think I'll watch this, and then I go, oh, fine, and then I start. But some that I watch.
Yeah,
I just watch them straight through because I love them, and then I just move on. Some are really good, and I don't want to. I don't get deterred. I just sit there, and I know I'm going to finish it. But some I don't finish, and I like to finish.
Of course,
some of the Turkish ones I've seen are pretty good, and even though they're dubbing, it's still good. You know, the vocabulary is good, and it's just a good story, and they come back quicker, a lot of them, because sometimes, I love, Kevin Costner, so I watch Yellowstone, so then I'm waiting for it to come on, and so I go, oh, season five, did I see season five? Then I'm watching, and I go, like, I know all these scenes, I saw this, but I said to my husband, well, we'll just watch it, because then we'll remember, because it's been several years since it's on.
Yeah.
It's not just 6 months. And I went like, oh, no, he was governor then. He was just, and I do like him. He's a very interesting, I don't know if he'll be on. I don't know what they've decided on that. Nobody will say it, but it looks like he might not be on that. But because I've seen him interviewed, I've watched interviews. He is a very good person to do movies because he always cares about the words that the writer wrote.
Yes.
He won't take it if he doesn't like the words. And so I think that's a good thing. So, I mean, Yellowstone, we'll see. But I have liked it. But I'm sitting watching and I'm going like, wait a minute. I saw this scene and that one. I said to my husband, remember that? He goes, well, I don't know. I go, but I remember every scene, every word. You know, I know when I've seen it. I'm sure you do the same. You know, especially if it's a scene you like.
But it's also sometimes nice to rewatch it if the writing is very good too.
Yes, and I do. My show used to be called A Good Story is a Good Story. That's how I started out because I just believe when people are writing, if it's not a good story, they don't care. You know, you have to have that you just need a good story. It has to have a beginning, middle, and end. But like how you get there. Is, I think I was talking this last week, it was a few weeks ago, that the problem now is with all the back, story, it gets very difficult for people now to understand exactly why they keep going back and forth and back and forth. And even at the beginning of my writing career, people they really didn't like when you did that. I said, don't keep doing backstory. But you need backstory now because of all the series. You find yourself doing that. But it does get complicated sometimes where on certain shows you're going like, well, what happened then? And you really have to watch every scene because you'll miss a scene that made you understand why they did something.
Right. It might be a little too much backstory.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You don't need it all the time. And so, and even in my own writing, sometimes I'm thinking, well, because I do write quick dialogue, and, you know, my dialogue is my strength. Description is not.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you're writing it, and you have to think that people go, he said, she said, I don't like that. But sometimes I get it when people need that. But if two people are in a room and they're talking, why do you have to say, he said, their sentences. That's how people speak.
Right.
But then you have to
Absolutely.
Go, oh, no, he walked over there to the table. Like, well, who cares? You're in the middle of a conversation. But that's what
right.
I think happens now. And you spend time thinking of that, which when you're writing dialogue, it's just quick, fast, because that's how, like we're talking now, that's how it is.
It's true. I mean, I think it's important sometimes to point out if someone's facial expression changes or,
right,
you know,
right.
simple physical tones like that add
right.
to the conversation
yeah.
because sometimes just
yeah.
reading the words, was that a joke? Was that said in anger, you know, things that enhance
right, right.
the scene and
right.
help you to visualize it. I think
yeah.
those
as
are the elements
as I write
that
in place. That's what I've done is I have like 12
right.
screenplays, and that's really what I did for years. But, and that is true. When you write a screenplay, it's all dialogue, you know, and
yes.
you only have to set where you are. But
right.
So I think, but we were talking about the he said, she said, and he quietly did this, he did, you know, and I don't know if readers actually care about that. They want to hear what they're saying.
They do. They do.
You know, and so I think that's a problem for authors of trying to, because I've had authors on that, I've had professors and different people, and they write very different. They do not write, they do not do the rules, because there are no rules. They do whatever they want.
Exactly.
And so I think
yes.
it's hard to do that because mentally you go, oh, well, should I start a sentence with but or and? I mean, if you were in school,
of course you
that
should.
Would not be working out for you. Right? But
yeah.
you do now. So, and I think those are the rules that have changed. There are no rules. So, but then if you get people that are reviewers, they go, why did they do this? There was no comma. There's no this. I'm thinking like, what? Go away, you know, don't do this to people because it's wrong,
yeah.
you know, and that's why I like audiobooks because it's just like they're telling you the story because people
this
nowadays, they
yep.
do get all hung up and crazy when someone makes the mistake in a book. They go, look at that. Look what they did.
Oh, I've got those, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm
yeah.
going to tell you, when I made my collection of the three, there was one sentence that bothered me the whole time. I just it didn't make sense to me, and I couldn't figure out what happened that I did it and why nobody ever noticed it, but I noticed it, and it was bothering me. So now when I did the collection, I took out that sentence, and I went, it may be stupid for somebody to think, but it didn't need to be there. And it just took it another way. And I'm so happy I got that one sentence out. Because when I did screenwriting, if I would read the sentence over and over, because if it doesn't sound right, the person,
yes.
people talk the way they talk. And like that's the thing about when you redo things. If somebody says, oh, change this, they go, oh, fine, they'll change that paragraph. Once you change a paragraph, you've changed the whole story.
You have.
You can't.
Definitely.
Right. Do you agree on
yeah.
that? Oh, good. Right. Isn't it
yeah.
true? You cannot do that. You know, because it matters.
Oh,
you have
absolutely.
To go back and fix other things. Yeah. So
yeah.
Right,
well,
so when you're writing,
especially
do you
in a
write
mystery.
Straight through. Right. Exactly.
I
you write
do.
Straight through.
I do.
Good girl.
Because
good.
It's a mystery. Yeah, because it's a mystery, I do have to know where I'm going. Otherwise, I'll have a body and no one who could have done it.
Yeah.
It's that whole, are you a plotter or a pantser? You've heard that
yeah.
question. Do you fly
yeah,
by the seat of your pants?
A lot of my guests say that. Yeah, a lot of them say
yeah.
that.
I guess I'm a
yeah.
plotster, so I'm a bit of both. So I plan out the murder, and I need to know who did it, and I need to know why, because you have to, of course, plant some clues along
right,
the way.
Right. Yes.
But when it comes to secondary characters and what the dialogue along that journey, the different characters, the different suspects, those are, I don't outline. I can't outline. Outline is a dirty word to me. I
can't outline.
The hair on my arm stands up. Yeah, I just can't.
It does not. It does not work. But what I do, right? But I make. I have little cards that I use, like white index cards. Sometimes I use that a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, to remember things. You know,
of course,
for me. You know, because once I write something, I remember it. If I don't write it, even if I write like a little note, like two words or three words, I get it. It sticks in my head. But otherwise, it'll be gone. You know, you can't take a chance like that. Go, oh, I'll remember that. You go like, then you sit and think, what was it they were supposed to remember?
Yeah. Same here. I have a notebook where I mean, especially like the last Vermont book I wrote was about murder at a game supper. And it's not game like board games. It's game meat. So it's Vermont, it's hunters bringing in their kill and making stew and everything else out of it. And there was quite a bit of research for that because I'm not a hunter. But it was also the environmental impact of hunting, how the goods, the bad. And so there was a bit of research. So, yeah, I definitely take a lot of notes if there's any sort of subject or area of expertise that I really need to research. And I also, as we discussed, I write down my character names and a little bit of their backstory, and those are usually my suspects, and I try to work in who's who and why they might have wanted to kill the victim or the second victim, if there is a second one. But when it comes to putting it on the page, it's a little more, it's a lot more spontaneous. I know so-and-so and so-and-so need to get into an argument, but I have no idea, you know.
But once they start talking, they will get it. You know, see, that's the thing. I've told people this, and I do really believe this. When people don't know how to write dialogue, this is the best way to do it. You put two people in a room. Somebody says something, and the other person will answer. That's it. It's not like a great like a theory that you do. You just, when people are in a room, they're either talking, and if they're not talking, then they're mad. So then you already know that. But
exactly.
And if I could follow my own advice, because I have done this for so many years, done so many shows, and know exactly the right way that I used to do it, but I get caught up in my own mind with marketing, and I have to completely say I'm not going to market, and then I start and I look and I go, well, maybe I should do this. This is so bad for writers. I wrote so much better before the internet, you know, before all of this. So we talked about this before the show a little. The marketing now, I repeat this over and over again, because those that are listening and don't understand what's happening, nobody does. Because when you see someone, like I saw someone that I didn't see for a while, and they go, are you writing? And I'm going like, do you ever see me still on Facebook? They don't, or they don't see me on anywhere. So I'm thinking, what is wrong with this picture? So what I'm thinking in my head now is I'm going to look for new, different people, because the other people, they're gone. And if you think people are seeing your things, they're probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is bad.
Facebook is interesting, and I think we had touched upon it before our call, that I think Facebook isn't seeing as much traffic as it used to, and I also think it's a demographic that's shrinking.
Yeah.
Same thought, a demographic that's, A, it's older, B, it's shrinking.
Yeah.
People always like the new shiny object, and I think other platforms are that.
So you mentioned Blue Sky. Can you talk about that a little? What made you decide? You just heard about it? Because I've heard it often.
It's funny. When I was looking for an alternative to Twitter, and I still call it Twitter,
Yeah, me too.
I found Blue Sky. I got an invitation because back then you needed an invitation. I think that was last year. But it was quiet. There was no one joining. And I think now since the election and Elon Musk's prominence in the news, I think a lot of people are migrating. There's a lot of bots on Twitter, a lot of negative engagement on Twitter. Yeah. And I think people are just tired of it, especially the creatives.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting spam messages and everything else. And it's just, you know, we want to promote ourselves. We want to discuss writing. We want to sell books. We want to engage with other writers and help them sell their books. Fortunately, this past week, there's been a tremendous influx of writers, creatives, illustrators, you name it, migrating from Twitter to Blue Sky. I think it was the number one app today. I think it reached number one.
Oh, that's good.
On the App Store. Yeah. So what's been nice?
I think Twitter was okay years ago. Twitter was okay. I'm talking maybe 15 years ago or 12, whatever. I think Hootsuite and Twitter came out at the same time or something. And,
they did.
I never could figure out Hootsuite. I just couldn't. And I don't like Goodreads because it's too crazy in there. I think it should work differently, and it doesn't. It doesn't do anything that much. And but I think TikTok is not bad because it's book. You can go into BookTok, and there's a lot of people with books.
Yeah.
But I do think you get seen more. I don't know if you can monetize it yet. I don't know that. But you can. People are actually looking at it. We're on Facebook or some of the, you know, even Linktree, I was on that too, and then I had my website done. So the person was saying to me, why are you on Linktree? Because if you have a website, stop letting people are going other places then. See, I think websites for a while weren't as popular. I think they're important. Websites.
They are.
I really do.
Yeah.
I think it's important. So I think that the thing about that is, you know, people could go on your site. See, because even if you're pushing people like to Amazon, but if you're on your site and they go to your site, they'll go to your book. Because once you start putting them other places, and it does make sense. Maybe 5 years ago it was different, but it's not. It's easier now. My thought is make it as simple as possible for people. My website is much, I've changed a lot. I've taken a lot of stuff off of it because people do not want to read a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know what's going on, where they can get your book, and that's it. I put myself only on Amazon because I think a lot of people still are only on Amazon. And Barnes & Noble, they have issues because you can't change things on there like you can on Amazon as well.
I'm not so familiar with that. I know I'm on Barnes & Noble and Amazon because my publishers handle end of it.
Books are
thankfully
on there, right, and books are on there, but most people are on Amazon.
I think they are.
That's just how it is. And Smashwords was now with Draft 2, and I think they're okay, but I think their marketing technique doesn't seem to help the author any. People are on there, and it's free, but it doesn't seem to do anything for people, you know. So I think Amazon is where people are. But then again, there's issues. So I think for people listening, they need to figure out what might be good for them. And you sometimes now have to change. I think I will do the Blue Skies, like you were saying, because I think you can still be on Facebook and put whatever – you want on there, but you have to go somewhere else. And even now when you do Instagram from Facebook, then it comes up on Facebook where then you have to start clicking people's names. And I don't want to keep doing that because there are people I don't want to keep sending stuff to them if they don't want it. And you don't know anymore who wants what, or even if they're even listening or looking. Do you post directly on Instagram, or does it go through Facebook for you?
Oh, I just do directly to Instagram, and then it shares to Threads when I do a post.
Yeah, I'm on that. I have to work on that too now. Right, the Threads.
Yeah.
So I think
Threads is a little quieter.
Need changes. Yeah. But I see people coming in all the time. They're just asking me to, you know, follow me. And they're even movies. They're just people going on there because they're leaving other sites.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think there'll be a big difference happening soon.
I think so.
Yeah. Because I think as authors, we would like to just do our thing and leave. Goodbye.
Absolutely.
You know, I think most of us over the last few years have seen too many things out there. It's not doing anybody's head any good. We need to all like have a rest and just do what we like, writing.
It's true.
You know,
go ahead.
No, that's it. That was it.
I enjoy some of the more personal appearances too. I belong to Sisters in Crime, which is, of course, a crime writing.
I know. I know that one. I used to have guests on there, and I don't do that anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really write crime. Well, I am writing one, but I gave it up, so I'm not sure, if I'll go back on it, you know.
Yeah. But what we did and what we've been doing is reaching out to local libraries. Libraries are often starving for programming to provide to their communities. And it was me and I think five other authors who are in our chapter of Sisters in Crime. And what we did is we did a panel discussion followed by a signing. And this was that was November 2nd, and the last weekend.
That's interesting.
And it went very well. The library was very happy to have us because they're bringing people in their doors. They're providing programming. People are having an opportunity to actually chat with an author, which they usually find very cool.
People love that. People love that. And that's what happened to the bookstores. They stopped doing it as much. It's not that big of an effort for them to do that because people really like to talk to authors. I used to go to schools for kids, and that's where you sell books and do things like that. So, and I was thinking myself because I went back to my office and I thought, well, maybe I'll just write at the library because that's where I started, where I can just think. Because if I'm writing at home, sometimes I go, do laundry, I'll do this. I do stuff. I'm constantly doing stuff. I'm not one that could sit. Right. And so I say, it's just a minute. Okay. And then I'll go, maybe I'll just fold the laundry. And that's not like another minute, which is not a minute. But, but I do that. And I'm thinking, I need to not be here because I used to go to coffee shops. And so I get less done mentally than I did before. So I was thinking that myself. And then maybe I'll talk to the librarians because years ago it mattered and they were nice. And now they should really have people come because you're right. People love that. And because a lot of people want to write and there is no school to teach you what we all know for all these years.
That's true.
Like all the techniques and things on my shows, people are learning because they're hearing it and they don't have to feel alone.
Absolutely.
Because you don't know how to do everything. You know, you're not born knowing how to do this. So I think that's a good thing for people. So I think that's good that you did that because it's showing that maybe people will start doing things that they used to do again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just...
And I think they are tired.
Yeah, I think as we were saying before, they're tired of looking at a computer screen and Zoom and...
Yeah.
Social media, and there's something just nice about chatting and after the panel discussion and, going over and chatting and buying a book and actually feeling the book and smelling the book as strangely as that
I know.
Sounds.
I think it's very, I think that's where we're going.
Yeah.
You know, And so I think that that is what it was before, and that
it
is
was.
Maybe something that will be good, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think authors need to talk to readers, and readers need to talk to authors, and that makes it better.
It does.
You know, it does get it. You're just looking at a screen. But I do like to. Well, if you don't like to talk to people, then you shouldn't do it. But I love talking to people. So
I do too.
For me, that was fun.
Yeah.
So
Same here.
We're almost done. Yeah. Go ahead.
And I think what was nice about this particular event is it was authors talking to each other as well. So there was just great camaraderie. And even though we wrote all different subgenres of mystery, there was a Western and noir and psychological thriller and, you know,
see,
historical.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because that's how my show is. I've met people that I've never met, would have never met. I've learned so much from people because everybody has a little technique that's different than everybody, you know, than someone else. So it's that one little thing that you might not have thought of that somebody told you that could help you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, and I think, and I think that's a good thing to me. I love it.
It.
You know,
yeah.
But, I do think people need to make some changes. But I would like to say, next time you come on, can you write me a list of all the old movies that you've been watching? And then we can have a show about
absolutely.
That because that's always so much fun. I love
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And I know for people
I love
that
it
want
too.
To watch, it's the best. You know, and for those out there that don't read, you know, that don't watch a lot of the old movies, if you want to learn how to do really good dialogue, watch old movies. They have great dialogue, don't they?
Yes.
Really good.
They do. Especially Ben Heck.
You know,
all those great screenwriters.
Have you watched Discretion with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman? Did you see that?
Oh, yes, of course.
I watched it like a lot of times. I just love it. I don't know what. Some movies I just watch. I just love them. You know,
they're comfort
and it's so
movies.
Glamorous.
Yes.
They are, and it's glamorous,
they are.
And you know what they're going to say, but they all talk a lot.
Yeah.
Pretty soon our movie's
they're
coming out, Barbara Stanwyck's Connecticut, here we go. Christmas.
We're at that season.
Yes, we are. We are. All right, thank you so much. I have your website here, and so, and if anytime you want to come on, just let me know. Because we have great conversations. You're really interesting, and it's so fun
because
we think kind of a lot alike. And it's so, that's what I'm saying. So how would we have ever met? Never.
We wouldn't have.
I'm a Chicago person here. Who am I meeting? I hardly have guests from Chicago. Everybody's from the East. Most people are from the East Coast. I have people from the West Coast, but East seems to be more of the people that I have on. It's really strange. I don't know.
We're
Chicago,
gregarious.
Yes, we are. Yes, you are. All right. Okay. And thank you so much for coming. And have a great holiday season, because you will. I bet you decorate your house and everything a lot.
Of course. Yes.
I know.
That's
the only thing about being Jewish. But I still think it's beautiful. Listen, I think Christmas is the best time. It's such a fun time. You know, people are in good moods, hopefully. But it's and the Christmas movies and the feeling of family, it's really nice. It's a good feeling, you know. Even if people don't like each other, hopefully they'll get together here and be okay. I don't know about that. We don't write that. See, we don't write those things. We write the happily ever after, and we can work it out type. But I think, you know, it is a festive time. It's beautiful. You know,
it
makes you, sometimes when you go to restaurants, I wonder why they can't just keep that all year round, because it's such a good feeling, and people are so much nicer. I love it.
You know, and it's all, I mean, and you said you're Jewish, but the menorah, and it's all about lighting the darkness. That's what it's all about. The darkest time of year
and
us shedding light.
They're close together. Last year and this year, they're close together.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, it's nice. Holiday time is nice. So I hope this year people have a really happy holiday. And so, you know, I think this is important. You know, I like that about life, that we have the power to be happy, right?
We
do. It's up to
us. Absolutely.
Yeah, right. And we have the power to have fun in writing. So thank you so much. And yeah, write that list. And then after the first year, we'll do a show about that. Okay? All right. Thank
Sounds
you all for
terrific.
Listening. Have a great day. Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.